The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
Sorry, I was in the middle of renewing my champion energy contract. You know that thing John always talks about, champion energy. It's time for me to renew. Of course, the prices are great, and I just had to pick a plan. So they're like, hey, you got one more day to figure this out before things change. So I was delayed trying to figure out the best plan for me. Just go with champion. You'll be saving money. One of the few things John talks about that actually makes sense. Like, the sports stuff, give or take. But when he's talking about champion, that's where you that's a thing you can believe in. All right, let's get to the Texans. We are getting ever closer to training camp, which means it's time for people to make predictions, talk about teams, who they think can win a Super Bowl, who's a real contender. And the Texans, for most people, are in the mix. There's just the one caveat. And we've talked about it somewhat this offseason. We try to spread it out, because how many times can you talk about C.J. Stroud? We're not named Texans Radio, so we don't have to. But it is getting louder. Mostly, it's on him. If they don't win, people are going to point at him, whether it be something that's fair or not. The only thing people look at and go, why can't this team win a Super Bowl? They point at the quarterback and go, he has to play better. And it stems from, of course, what happened the final two games of his season in the playoffs. Those were atrocious. No one can play like that. No team can survive it. As great as the Texans defense is, they couldn't survive it. So he's got to play better. That is not the standard he has set, those two playoff games, but it's on everyone's mind. So here is Booger McFarland. This is after he talks about how great the defense is, because that's how every conversation goes with the Texans. It's about how great the defense is, and then they get into why the quarterback could stop them from reaching their goals. So he talks about Danielle Hunter, the corners, and then here's Booger McFarland on C.J. Stroud.
And the biggest issue for the Texans is really simple. This defense was consistently dominant throughout the season last year. Yep. Seattle was better at the end, but they were consistently dominant. Can C.J. Stroud help this defense? If he returns back to the form that he was his rookie year, this team can be a Super Bowl favorite. Hear me now. They can be a Super Bowl favorite in the AFC. But if they don't, they're going to waste one of the best defenses we've seen over the last couple years in a long time.
So there's the pressure. Forget about he needs he needs or could he return to rookie year form. It's a very odd conversation we're having about the quarterback, and we've discussed it here, but it's a national thing as well. That is now three seasons ago. Normally, you're not reverting back to rookie year to project what you hope a quarterback can be. You, whether it's steady growth or increments, and there's a little fallback, but there's also growth, you would expect in year four for us to not be talking about something that happened in 2023, but here we are. So it's the only thing people can hold on to when they talk about this quarterback. I think if he's just what he was in 2024 and 2025, they got a real shot to win a Super Bowl. Because if he was that guy in the playoffs, they're making a Super Bowl, or at least the AFC title game. And then you have Jarrett Stidham in a snowstorm. So you see how it plays out there. So I don't even think the hope of what he was in 2023 is enough. And maybe that is something he won't reach again because of being banged up, multiple concussions. You never know. Speaking of who he root for, the team I rooted for as a child, and still do because I'm one of those people who don't switch teams, you could point to concussions changing the chemistry maybe on the team and in the brain of a quarterback. Now, Tua was never the most physically gifted quarterback, and that was hampered by injuries his final game in college, and then the two concussions. He was a passing leader. By rating, he was leading the best offense of football. And concussion struck in 22 and 23. And then in 20, I think he made it through, which year did he make it through? I think it was 22. He made it through 23. And then 24, he got hit with another one. And you could say that quarterback ain't been the same since. So I'm not, as everyone says, not a doctor. But when you suffer concussions, it could change the way you play. Darren Waller did an interview. He said in talking about Tua that you could see the want to, and he knew what to do in practice, but he could not make those same decisions live. And Darren Waller, rightfully so, didn't diagnose him, but he said there could have been the body not being willing, even though the brain was, because of all the trauma that the body had taken. I don't know if that's happening with C.J. Stroud, but we have to remember, this is a quarterback who has had multiple concussions over the course of his career, and we really don't know how that affects anyone. So the hope for most people, the conversations are about offensive line and running the football as a way to take some of the pressure off. If we can do that, complement the defense, this team can reach the goals they want to reach. I still think they're going to need moments from the quarterback. And the question is he capable? As I said, forget about 2023. That might be something that we're not going to see. If he just settles in to being the 12th, 13th, or 14th best quarterback in football with the defense that he's paired with, that's good enough. You just can't have the disaster moments. But I do think with the conversations being had about him, whether he's fully healthy, whether he's fine, whether he's not affected by some of the things that Tua was affected by. I can't think of a player on the Texans roster who's had more pressure on them since way back in 2013. That Schaub season, which turned into a disaster, was one where you had a very similar circumstance. You had two straight playoff appearances, two straight division game appearances. Now they had won the division title, I think, both times. The Texans did it twice and then didn't do it in 2025. But the defense wasn't as good as this one. But that team as a whole believed they could go win a Super Bowl. Coming off 2012, which was disappointing, people believed this was a contender in 13, and it led to, I think they opened the season against the Chargers on the road. Big comeback. I think Brian Cushing had a pick six or something. Speaking of pick sixes and what that season turned into. But he had a pick six, I think, against the Chargers on Monday Night Football. They won that game. They won their second game. And then it all fell apart because Matt Schaub fell apart. I don't think CJ's going to fall apart. But I do think, coupled with Nick Caley, they're going to be the reason this team doesn't reach their goals. If they don't. I'm not even predicting that they won't. And then throwing an offensive line, I still don't believe in. So maybe I'm just talking about the entire offense at this point, besides David Montgomery and Nico Collins. But I don't think Nick Caley has the same amount of pressure, at least externally, that the quarterback does, and that's just how it goes. All you're going to hear, there's a Ryan Clark clip where he thinks he's going to bounce back. No surprise, Ryan Clark was as big as a defender at halftime of the Patriots game. All the conversations from now until C.J. Stroud proves it or doesn't prove it is that it's on him, and let's see how he handles it. He goes from, as Booker talked about, 2023, where everyone talked highly of him and thought he was going to be the reason the Texans did something that they could never do before. Now the conversations across football are, is he going to be the one to stop them from doing it, or can he help their defense, this defense, get to a level where we're talking about one of the best defenses in football, and maybe historically? Because if they don't win at a high level, unfortunately, this defense, however long they're together, is not going to be remembered. In the present, we will talk about them because they're our team, and they're great. No one remembers a great defense from the divisional round. No one. Like, you don't get a name. You don't get a cool nickname if you are a team who tops out in the divisional round. Like, the Vikings had purple people eaters way back when. They never won a Super Bowl, but they played in a Super Bowl. Denver with the John Elway teams, had Orange Crush. We know the Legion of Boom. I don't even know if the Ravens had an official name. They're just considered the best defense of all time, or one of them. Monsters of the Midway. Yeah, everyone gets a cool nickname, but you don't get one if you're losing to the Patriots in the divisional round, or if you have to go to, I don't know, Buffalo this time and lose. You got to win, and it won't be because of the defense if they don't. All right, we'll go to break. The number is 713-780-3776. We'll get to some other things when we come back.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
So some news, call that, maybe speculation, rumors, maybe that's a better way to term it. I think it was last week where randomly the Astros were mentioned in a Scooble trade, that the Astros were on the lookout. Maybe they were going to target a big fish. We heard that in the offseason, and it turned out the big fish was some combo of Burrows and Umai, and we've seen how that's gone. But Sonny Gray, Tarek Scooble were the guys that the Astros were attached to. And there was some scoffing done by me and others. How the hell is that going to happen? And why would you acquire a guy you're going to have to pay when they don't want to pay anyone at the level they would have to pay Scooble? In the days that have followed, there's been some pushback on a potential trade of Scooble, period. And also, I've not seen mention of the Astros since. Jeff Passan, yesterday, I believe, or maybe the day before, said, be on the lookout from a team that no one wants to hear from, the Dodgers. If Scooble goes someplace, it could be the Dodgers. Now, the New York Post is reporting that that's unlikely. But right now, the Rays, the Braves, and the Cubs, according to the Post, are the teams looking to buy. The Rays would be really surprising. It just doesn't feel like their MO. They got a really good team. Trading for Scooble would be a bit of a game changer. Now, would they want to pay him after this year? That's a different question. But no mention of the Astros anywhere. Not a shock. We'll see if we have to deal with the Dodgers in particular making a trade for school. But it just feels like they would do something like that, because they do things like this all the time, just to piss off the rest of baseball before work stoppage, which seems like could be on the horizon. Okay. So we got Colton here with me. he's filling in today. Colton, I don't know that you have a Twitter account. I'm sure you have some form of social media. Have you ever woken up to your name being mentioned in a way you don't want it to be mentioned?
Can't say I have. I'm not on Twitter, at least.
Got it. Maybe someone's talking about you, the way you don't want them to. But as far as mentioned on social media, not the case. I only bring it up because, like, Shams has a life where people criticize him tweeting about players that no one cares about, or he's mentioning the agent in a tweet. Like always a mention of, you know, the person who gave you the news, but it's not couched that way. It's like, hey, insert agent name of certain agency, got the deal done for some mid-level free agent. Why are you big upping the agent? We know why, but we'd ask you to stop. No one cares. This tweet is a little different, though. Shams woke up to a tweet from the father of just a regular, like, teenage kid. He's an NBA fan. I guess they were in Vegas. So the dad got his son pictures, or took pictures of his son with Walker Kessler, Bronny James, Austin Reeves. There's a trend. Lakers. This kid is a fan of the Lakers. I think the dad in the tweet said something like, great for my son to meet all his favorite players. What a great time. And it's like a four box. It's pictures of all of them. And then he threw in, except for Shams, he's an awful person. I'm like, damn. Whatever Shams did, and probably simply just said no, or maybe ignored the kid. Because I don't know if that we see Shams in pictures. The only time we see Shams is like on television. So I don't know that anyone shouldn't want a picture with the newsbreaker. But this guy was like, Austin Reeves, Walker Kessler, Bronny James, all cool. Shams, awful individual. I'm sure people have said other things about Shams that he's not a fan of. But that one had to be like, when he sees it, he's got to be like, damn, what you say F me for? Like, here is the tweet in its entirety. My son having the time of his life meeting all his NBA favorites, players and coaches, also very nice. The only person that wasn't nice was Shams Charania. He was a jerk and just not a good person. Like, being called a jerk is one thing, but when he makes the evaluation that you're not a good person after, I don't know, what, 2 minutes, if that, that's a tough thing to wake up to. I'm sure Shams will wave it away. Kay Adams likes him, so I'm sure he'll be fine. But that's a tough tweet for people to be like, oh, not only aren't you Woj, which is some of the bleep he catches, we want Woj. Woj was better. Now he's got just some dude with, you know, heartwarming pictures with his son with all these NBA players. And then you suck. You're a bad person. All right. Nice way to wake up in the morning. Shout out to, if you want to see the tweet, you can type in Brian Salmons on X or at Bryson's_WorldXD. Easier to type in Brian Salmons or just Shams. I think it's the trending topic with Shams. If you look it up, it's, to the very last sentence, it's, oh, look at this dad. And, like, why is this on my timeline? It's just a dad taking pictures of his kid with players, Laker players. And then, bam, at the end, Shams is not a good person. Like, I hear that on this show, or not this show. They'd be a little rough for Sean just to tell that to me. But on the morning show, which I come to expect, we all tell each other they're not a good person. In some ways, we mean it as far as the show environment, but not really. From what I can tell, I'm not hanging out with John, but people like him. I don't get it, but people like him. Same for Lance. I get that more so than I get the John stuff. But I don't think they're bad people outside of the show. And they say the same to me. They may think I'm a bad person, but they say the same to me. I don't know that I've had anyone ever say that to me. Maybe they thought it in my life. You can't have fans everywhere. Not everyone has 100% approval rating. It's not how life works. But never to the point where they felt so bad about their interaction with me that they wrote about it and posted it, and now the whole world knows that Shams ain't with it. I get it. He don't want to take pictures. He doesn't take pictures. But bad guy, Shams Charania. Thanks to Brian Salmons for the information. Now I know better. I'm sure some Milwaukee Bucks fans think of him like that anyway after the Giannis stuff. All right, we'll go to break with that. Just be on the lookout. Some random person wants to take a picture of you or with you with their kid for some reason. Just take the picture. You never know how far their reach on X will go. You may wake up one day and go, damn. Like, you know, we got a listener appreciation party coming up here. I don't know if I should have shared that, but it's coming. I don't know. I don't even know the date. But it'll it's not that far away. I'm sure we'll give you more information as we get closer. Like, people will come up to me and go, hey, give me a hug, Dell. It's now a running bit because people know I don't like hugs. No, oddly enough, I don't want to hug random men, but it is what it is. But I do take pictures. I don't want the four box of it to be a picture with Lance, a picture with John, a picture with Jeremy, a picture with Joe, all nice people, except for at Del V2. He was a jerk and just not a good person. I don't need it. So just take the photo. You may not like it. Slap that fake smile on your face, but take the photo. You don't. It would be to a lesser degree, certainly. I just don't need the. I don't need the sentence. He was a jerk and just not a good person. That'll teach Shams. Stop putting agents in your tweets, and take photos with kids who want to take photos with you. That's all. It's pretty simple. Now you don't have this on your jacket. All right. Now we'll go to break. We got a couple more segments to go. If you want to get in, 713-780-3776. So if you're watching on stream, Twitter, or YouTube, Colton's in there with his Spain jersey on. That game is at 2 today. Not catering to the American audience. I do wonder if the impossible dream had happened, the U.S. had made it, would they have thrown a game on against a European power like 7 and force whoever they played to, and in this case, it would have been France. The French to watch the game in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m. or so, or 3, whenever it would have been. But it is Spain versus France, so it comfortably will be. It won't be prime time over there, but at a point where it's not crazy to go watch soccer if you're going to go to a watch party or something. Colton explained he's got ties to the country of Spain. He's rooting for Spain. I don't have any ties, but I just like watching France play soccer. They're the most dynamic offensive team in the tournament. In some ways, I want the narrative of France versus Argentina because France, of course, nearly came back and won, went to penalties, they lost. You've got the apology from Enzo Fernandez for that song the Argentinians sang on the bus after they won Copa America about the French team. You've just got a lot going on there for those two countries, at least two teams, difference in style, and see if France can get their get back. And then of course, tomorrow you have the English as well, who have their history of, I won't even say, their recent history is not bad. They get to big tournament finals or semifinals. They just haven't been able to get over the hump. It is nothing like what it was in like that Beckham, Rooney, Gerrard, Lampard era where they were losing earlier than they would like. This is now a team under Tuchel and before then under Southgate who reaches the late stages of tournaments. They just haven't been able to win one. I don't know if it's my Premier League stuff, because that's the big league that I watch, that I have an affinity for England. But when I think about it, if you look at this tournament, no Premier League player scored a goal for England. It has been Bellingham, who plays in Spain for Real Madrid, Harry Kane, who plays for Bayern in the Bundesliga, and Marcus Rashford, who you may associate with Man U in England, but he plays his football for Barcelona. At least he did. We'll see where he goes. So the domestic league, many people consider the best league in the world. While those guys have all spent time there, I think Bellingham played for Birmingham. I don't know if they're in the Premier League at the time. but he's played in England. They're not currently there, and all the goals are coming from Englishmen who play their football elsewhere. So, and also, I'm sick of Argentina. Colton, we'll see if you agree. Were you in yesterday when I said they're the Chiefs of soccer, of world soccer at this point?
I was, yeah. 2024 Chiefs. They get it done at the end, and everyone's praying on their downfall.
Yeah, and I think, particularly if they see France, they're going to see their version of the Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles, the way the Chiefs did in their most recent Super Bowl appearance when they got blown out. I think that's what's in store for Argentina if they see France. I think they can beat England. I think they could beat Spain. I don't think they should be favored against Spain, because while Spain doesn't have an Mbappe or Olise or Dembele, apparently they have a Marino who scores all their big goals now, whether it comes from goalkeeper error or otherwise. You want a big goal? You ask the Arsenal man to go score. Marino's done that a couple of times for Spain. So
super sub.
Yeah. So we'll see how it plays out today. I think I got France 2-1. I think we're in for drama. I think this tournament will cap itself off with some dramatic matches. But do I think it goes to extra time? I don't know. I don't think so. I think this is one in regular time. I'm going to go with France 2-1. If it goes to extra time, then I think Spain's odds improve. But I'm going to take France here. I really can't call tomorrow at this point. Do the English get to a World Cup final for the first time since the one they won in 66? Or does Argentina find a way again? Because the teams Argentina's played, there was an expectation that they should have beat them, even though the matches were close. Are they going to be able to turn it up against now a team that people don't favor them over? I mean, there are some, because it's much like the Mahomes effect, who are just saying, well, they have Messi, they'll find a way. And also with the Chiefs, too, you just mentioned it, Colton, they find a way. So that is kind of what people are leaning into with Argentina for a reason they would win tomorrow. I haven't heard any real insightful reasons they'd win. It's just, hey, they do it all the time. They're going to do it again. It's more historic value, and certainly they've done it in this World Cup. And also, if you just think England's cursed, if you think England could never beat Argentina in this match because they have a history of not beating Argentina.
And apparently FIFA is rigging it for Argentina.
Yes, they have a referee from MLS who's refereed several Messi games, and Messi's never lost with this referee. So there's that, which leads once again into the Chiefs conversation about referees preferring the Chiefs, at least the NFL allegedly preferring them. So there's a lot there. And as I said earlier, we only got four matches to go, and one of them goes off today. So I'm excited, man. In a summer where the Astros have been up and down, outside of this last series where they lost, they've played better through the bulk of the summer after a bad start. This, at least for me, needed a little extra. The World Cup has provided that, and that means we're just weeks away from training camp and the start of fall practice, as they call it in college football. So we're almost there, everybody. If you were simply holding on for football to start, not that far away. I'll thank the World Cup at a minimum for that. But I'll go with France. I don't think there'll be a lot of difference between them, but I think in the moments where France does have the ball, I think they will create enough chances to capitalize. We'll see what Cucurella can do if he starts. And if they get enough one-on-ones, which is something you want to avoid, Mbappe on the wing running at your guys, is not something any defender in the world wants. I think Spain could be had there. It's just that they have so much of the ball, you don't have to worry about it as much. It is a much greater example of what the U.S. did in their run. On the ball, you don't have to worry about how bad your defense is. And I think Spain is better, certainly, on defense. But I don't know how anyone holds up against France if you continue to give them opportunities to run at you, whether it be on the counter or when they can bombard you with possession. So we've got, as it's been stated several times, you've got the biggest nations who play the sport, at least if you go by the rankings in FIFA. And while there may be some more historically relevant teams because they have one more. I don't think as far as the four that are remaining, you could find a quartet of teams that fit all the things you want. Long-suffering England, defending champ, recent winner, and Spain, who is your most recent first-time champ. You got it all. We'll see if the games match up to what I think the rightful hype around the turn around this Final Four. To make it a college basketball term, or sync it up with college basketball, you don't have any VCUs in this. No Florida Atlantics, and as much as I love the school, no Miamis, like the Houston Final Four, no San Diego States. And, you know, UConn, would, I guess you could comp it to Spain. Spain's been good for a long time. UConn was good before they broke through. But UConn's, now it's been 20-plus years now, but you compare them to Blue Bloods, if you want to call them that. UConn's like new money when it comes to the other Blue Bloods of college basketball. Spain would be that. They've been certainly competitive, long standing soccer history, but hadn't won a World Cup since before 2010. And if you comp them to certainly France, and you know what, France can be considered new money too. Maybe I'll take it back. You've got multiple European countries who have been good but didn't really become giant world powers by winning one until the modern era. And I don't know who England would be in college basketball terms. Long-suffering, hadn't won one since the 60s, and it's back to being someone you can or at least have to worry about. What would be the comp? I mean, are they like Arizona? Arizona won one in 97, and did they win one in the 80s? I don't know if Arizona's the right comp, but I just think of teams who...
Michigan State, maybe?
Yeah, they have. They won the one in 2000. It's the only one they won. And they haven't won one since. They're all, and they've been in several Final Fours. That's not a bad one for England. But Michigan State was never considered one of the more, even as they stand now, even with not, they're never like considered the most talented team in the country. England can rightfully say, if you just go man for man, we're a top four talent team in the world. So I would have to find – that's why I think about Arizona. They always recruit well. And, you know, there's some flame outs from time to time. But also, they always have a shot. We'll see if I can find a better comp. But right now, we'll see if the Arizona of world football can go get them one. And they have to go through Duke. Kind of hated around the world, Argentina is, for several reasons. But they are winners. And Duke ain't won one in a while, but you get the idea. All right, we'll go to break. We got one more segment to go. Me and Colton here till noon, and then it's Rich Eisen. And then it is Will Kunkel and Joe George. But that's hours away. We got one more segment to go.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
We're figuring it out, the comp for England. I wasn't happy about the Arizona one. Now, this team hasn't won a title, but they've been close. And they're long-suffering. I think, locally, the Cougs line up with England. They've been at the precipice. There have been some unfortunate scenarios, whether you want to call a red card the equivalent of Jamal Shedd getting hurt. You've been in title games that you thought you had won. England had a Euro final in their own country that they thought they would have won. They didn't. I think that one's very similar as far as finding a comp for England as they try to get that elusive title. Hopefully the Cougs can make another run. Kingston Flemings and Chris Sinak are currently in Summer League. That's going on right now. And for the Rockets, they play today. We'll see. Because Summer League's a little interesting. Sometimes the guys you're interested in playing play. Sometimes they don't. Bruce Thornton. Hopefully we see him. He played against... Who did he play against? He played against the Raptors. Wasn't as good as his first outing. In Summer League. So we'll see if he plays in game 4 for the Rockets. some teams have an approach where they care about a summer league title. There's, I think they still do the thing where it's not just wins, it's point differential, because they're not going to have a 16-team playoff or anything. So they whittle it down and they go. I mean, I don't know that the Rockets are taking it like that. We'll see. We'll see if they shoot for it. But I want to see more of Bruce Thornton. Had a good game first time around shooting-wise. Didn't shoot the ball particularly well in game two. He is someone who, at this point, you start to look at that guard rotation. Fred and his health seems to be something to take note of as far as his recovery. Marcus Smart, Reed Shepard, and then there's a spot for Bruce Thornton to be a fourth guard. And when you talk about the injuries over the course of the year, certainly can rise up the rotation if Fred is someone they manage. And while Fred is saying he'll be back, I think the Rockets will be careful with a 30-something-year-old guard and his health with eyes on the playoffs. I would hope they treat Kevin Durant much the same. You know what? 70-plus games, not necessary this time around. You want to play 70, 65, whatever it is, just to avoid potentially what happened in the playoffs in round one where you get hurt in practice. Do all you need to do to make sure the guys who we have to believe in, because this team has decided to trend older, make sure those guys are ready to go when the playoffs roll around. Let's avoid a scenario where Durant, Adams, and Fred VanVleet are unavailable for playoff games like they were this past season. I can't see that name, but they want to talk Astros injuries. And when I see the name, I'll bring you on. I think all you have to do is click on it, Colton. I'll be able to see the name. So I'll get to you. Anyone else as we wrap up the show? You can certainly get in. Yeah, I'm just gonna guess. David, is that what that says? All right, David, you want to talk Astros injuries? What's up, David?
I pitched in high school, and I pitched at Blinn under Leroy Dreyer, and I was taught the right way to pitch. I also had two travel teams. I taught my youngest son how to pitch. But the thing about it is, it seems to me, and that's besides the point, but it seems to me that the Astros pitchers aren't working during the off season. Okay, take a week off, take a couple of weeks off, then get back at it, throw 50 to 75 pitches a day, flat ground, on the mound, and then not come in full blast on spring training. That's what it seems to be to me, and they're like blowing their arms out right off the bat, right at the beginning of the season. I'll hang up and listen and see what your thoughts are.
So to your point on that, there was a bit of an issue to start this season where Dana Brown questioned how Hunter Brown was working in the offseason. It led to Hunter Brown missing time to begin the year and not necessarily offseason, but in spring training. Dana Brown questioned why Hunter Brown was throwing as hard as he was as he was getting ready for the year, and Hunter Brown said, hey, this is what I always do. I didn't have any problems. Well, he had problems this time around, and he was absent far longer than we would want. I don't know how the Astros train in the offseason, but what we do know is, despite the things they did this past offseason, to try to change their return to play standards, and this was across all the players, not just the pitchers, we still had the same issues. From Hunter Brown to the most recent one at Mike Burrows, who has elbow neuritis, which is, as I look it up, deemed inflammation. It can be other things too, but that is what the Astros are calling the Mike Burrows issue. Yeah, inflammation, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, loss of reflexes, can be an autoimmune disorder. I don't know the extent of Mike Burrow's and his issues, but he's dealing with it. We just thought he got sent away because he was bad. Now there may be a reason for it. We'll see how long he's out. But the Astros for years have had an issue. I jokingly have put the blame on the Butcher of Bel Air, which is now I'm forgetting his name. The mentor of Miller and Murphy. He went with the Diamondbacks. I'm sure there's people out there. Brent Strom, there it is. I jokingly called him the Butcher of Bel Air because of all the arm issues and while he was around and then what followed after he left. The Astros have tried. And yet it still follows them. Maybe there's no fixing to it. It's just there's the way they want their pitchers to pitch. These are the things that happen. Hunter Brown didn't have a catastrophic injury. He had been the one guy who had avoided. He did avoid a catastrophic injury. He had been the one guy to avoid any real arm problems. And thankfully, it wasn't something. His absence didn't extend to an entire season. Is that just baseball, or do the Astros have something fundamentally wrong with the way they ask their pitchers to get ready? They have not been able to find a fix for it. Still waiting on head Wesneski to come back. He was part of the Cam Smith trade, or the Kyle Tucker trade, I guess. Paredes, Cam Smith, and Wesneski. Haven't seen him in a good long while. Thanks for the call, David. I appreciate the bona fides. I love when people are like, look, I can talk about this because I was a pitcher. And I trust you. I believe you. You've called about pitching before, so I believe that. I would default to the Astros should know better, but they haven't been able to fix their problem. And it's kind of derailed what this team's potential could have been over the last couple of years. Either guys are absent or they were back from long injuries and weren't the same. All right, we're going to go to break, but that means we're done. I've got a request from Art. He's asked me to ask you a lot of questions, Colton, that I refuse to, just because they're art questions and there's really no reason for you to need to answer them. But he does make a request. He wants you to play, because, you know, we hit a sounder as we go to end the show. There's a song that Sean plays. I don't remember what it is. I know it. I just can't think of the title right now or how it's labeled over there. But Art wants you to play the "Oh, He Dope" sounder. It is a LeBron sounder. I'm not sure exactly how Sean has labeled it. He doesn't want you to play "Do You Want My Mom's Clothes." You can be a contrarian and play that or honor the request. It's really up to you. Travis, you want to talk about the shortstops taken in the Astros draft? Sorry, Travis. We're done for the day. The next people, there's a song. The next people who can take that call are Kunkel and Joe. That's at 3, or you can call in tomorrow because we are the home for Astros Draft Talk. You know what people think when they hear this show? That guy's got thoughts on the Astros Draft. It's not. It's not what I really do, but I'll take your call. It's just a little late in the show to do it. I'll read up, Travis, on the shortstops the Astros are taking, so I have an answer for you tomorrow. All right, Colton, what's it going to be?
Oh, he dope.
Oh, see, Art, you found someone who will honor a request. Sean wouldn't have, and I know I wouldn't have either, but trust me. Colton, once you're jaded enough, you'll start ignoring the request and do things to spite them. Just how it goes. We're done. Rich Eisen's up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.